So welcome to today's episode, where we are exploring the fascinating intersection of AI, education, and language learning with Steve Toy, a renowned expert in cultural and generational perceptions of AI tech. Join us as Steve shares his insights on the transformative power of AI in schools, the ethical considerations of integrating AI into learning, and the incredible impact of becoming multilingual, which I cannot even say as a word. Ironically, my English is not even that great. In our increasingly globalized world. Steve, welcome to Futureproof.
Thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. I know I gave just a little bit of a tease of it in the intro, but I know you're a lot more than just what I summed you up as. So who are you? What did you do on a day-to-day basis? And how do you define yourself and your work?
Well, officially, I hold the title of CEO of Memrise, which is one of the language learning apps out there that many people will be familiar with, and it is in the same ilk, or has historically been in the same category as Duolingo and Babbel and Busuu and Mondly and Drops and Rosetta Stone and companies like that. And I got here by way of career in technology, very often associated with mobile apps and artificial intelligence. And I'm here to sort of help Memrise get to the next level of deploying technology to help people acquire a language more successfully.
If I was going to be a cynical person, which I'm not, but I try to play one on TV or podcast sometimes. So why was this a challenge that you wanted to take on? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of money in the space. There's a lot of interest in the space. But why did you feel, okay, language, that's something that's actually pretty important?
I got to say, I was very interested in the mobile app business, given that the role that I had immediately prior to this was running a company called Apollon, which was a portfolio of 50 mobile apps. And during my time at Apollon, we actually looked at seeing if we could acquire Memrise, but Memrise wasn't having any of that. But that's how I became knowledgeable about Memrise. Over at Apollon, we actually wound up acquiring a company called iTranslate, which is in the language space. And so I had a good familiarity about both language learning and applications, mobile applications. And those two things combined with a founding team over here at Memrise that really had a very wholesome and positive view of what can be accomplished in the world and what good can happen when people learn more languages all came together at the right time for me. And so I joined the team here and started the journey.
With your extensive experience, okay, you're a good person to ask this question. How do you envision AI transforming the way that we approach education and learning in the next decade? Because it seems like there are a lot of people who are, I mean, I think there are some people who are very optimistic about AI. There are some people who are just nonstop pointing out the flaws and the challenges associated with it. But it seems like education could be a place that it can have a transformative effect, I imagine.
Yeah, I think it absolutely can. I think that there's always a place for teachers, and there's always a place for many of the traditional ways of learning the various things that we want to learn. But most importantly, the way we learn most things is by doing. And in the case of language learning, we have the ability to use technology to just make it easier to do on a 24/7 basis in a way that you just can't or you couldn't prior to these technologies. I think at the end of the day, we all kind of instinctively know that the best way to learn a language is to go in country and survive, because we are immersed in hearing the language and we're forced to use the language if we want to eat or accomplish anything. And AI technologies can bring that a little closer to home and into our device. We can turn the world of infinite content into learning opportunities by using AI to filter content by the words that you've learned. And we can use chatbots and large language models to allow you to have conversations that are constrained to the words that you have learned and just give you an opportunity to be successful step by step, 24/7, in a way that you can't with traditional methods.
Yeah, it's interesting because, as you know, like you were talking, I'm thinking a little bit about, yes, there's all of those, like thinking about how do you kind of structure this the right way in order to set people up to succeed. And you immerse yourself and you actually try and you go and do. And then it seems like there are some people who are going to say, well, there are some ethical considerations that we have to keep in mind as we're thinking about integrating AI technologies into educational settings. You just mentioned teachers are important, right? And thinking about the, well, I'll just maybe shut up and say, like, what are those ethical considerations that you can think of that we have to be a little bit mindful of in order to kind of not introduce more problems than we have to, and just to make sure essentially that the good of AI outweighs any ill effects?
Well, in the case of education, I think that the main areas of concern, and ones that I'm actually pretty familiar with, because in a previous life, I worked at a company called Software Secure, where we made technology that prevented people from cheating when taking tests with computers. And that is kind of the tip of the spear of the concerns that people have about AI and education, which is it can be used to cheat. And that has always been the case. When the internet came about and computers came about, yes, you can look up answers on the internet. And so all of the ways that have been developed to combat that pretty much apply to AI. There is, of course, it's easier to plagiarize by using generative AI to create something new and not copy and paste it. But for the most part, the cheating issue has been dealt with, you know, previously, and I don't think that's a huge concern. From there, the question becomes, you know, is there anything that people are getting exposed to when you use AI that they shouldn't get exposed to? And here again, that's something that we've been dealing with ever since we handed a kid a mobile device that they can put in their pocket and search the web with. So in the area of education and building tools for helping education, I don't see a lot of ethical concerns that haven't already been in existence and for the most part addressed in one way or the other.
How about the impact on employment, which I think is something that everybody is thinking about, that there are going to be some natural shifts in a number of different disciplines. And I kind of think that there were maybe people of my age where people didn't necessarily advise their kids, like, go be a plumber. Nothing wrong with being a plumber, but it wasn't something that I was advised to do. And now it seems like, well, maybe that is the, you know, one of those careers that would be very, very, you know, safe in relation to others. I imagine that kind of the role of the teacher in relation to the technology is just going to have to keep on shifting, right? And I just think you're going to have teachers who are technologists and who are not necessarily scared away or concerned with the using of the app, but figure out how they can reinforce the messages of the technology, or maybe how the technology can almost reinforce the humanity, quote unquote, if you will, of the individual who's actually doing the instruction. I mean, please tell me I'm wrong. Push back on anything. I'm just curious what you think.
Yeah, I think that technology of the kind that we've got now with the unfolding of everything you're seeing with large language models and the like is a way to augment the capabilities of folks. And that's not to say that there's not going to be any areas where there is a wholesale displacement. In fact, when I was at Ernst & Young, my job was to figure out where technology could pair with businesses and make things more efficient. And we literally wiped hundreds of man hours of work that was traditionally done by accountants in these accounting firms with a computer run that took care of things at 15 minutes with a higher degree of accuracy. So all of a sudden, a lot of work that a human did was just wiped out. However, those people can now start to put their attention to higher level things. They did not lose their job. The people that was doing that did not lose their job, but they did start to look for higher value, higher level things that they could do. And I think that this has been oft-told tale, right? The augmentation of other mobile devices that we carry in our back pocket, which has the computing power far greater than what we use to land on the moon, has augmented our ability to get information and communicate with people and so on. And I think the same thing holds true for these technologies, right down to the plumber, who will be a better plumber by knowing how to use these technologies and diagnose things and figure things out quicker than they could in any traditional environment.
Steve, I just got to say, you have not seen me around the house. I would not be a better plumber with no amount of technology. My wife fixes everything. But I see the general point I think is true, which is that, you know, like when you have an app in your pocket, when it's powerful, like if we're talking, you know, what you're doing at Memrise or so many different areas, you can engage people at all different levels and bring them up to know things, to be well-versed in particular things that they wouldn't necessarily be able to be exposed to otherwise. I mean, how can AI be tailored to cater to the unique learning needs of different generations, from young students to older adults? That's something that I think is obviously is near and dear to your heart based off of what you're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think perhaps a couple of examples might be a good way to illustrate this. In the world of learning a language, if you talk to any of the polyglots that are out there, they will often tell you that the best way to learn a language is to engage with the language with things that you care about, things that are interesting to you. And given that that's the case, being able to do exactly that is something that will aid the learning process and something that we're now able to do, because what we can do now is we can help people learn the words and phrases that are in a language. And based on those words and phrases, we can start to filter a huge quantity of content out there on the web, on YouTube and TikTok and so on, so that you can find the video content to hear the words that you've been learning, like you would do if you won in country and survive. And you can have it filtered by the words you know, rather than a random amount of words that you have no chance of understanding. And if we can do it with a large enough quantity of content, well, then the people that are interested in learning with Taylor Swift or Bad Bunny videos can do that. And the people that are interested in learning with football or baseball videos can do that. And the people who are interested in learning with cooking videos can do that. So the efficiency and the ability to filter the world's content based on words that you've learned and do it at such a high, you know, volume that everybody can just satisfy their own interests is a way that grandmom and grandchild can both learn French and then cement their learning by watching videos that are of interest to them. So that's one example. The similar examples can be carried over to conversations that you might have with the large language models that are out there. So the ability to make contact with precisely the things that matter to you and precisely the things that you are learning has just been given a several order of magnitude boost by these technologies.
Okay. And I think that building on that, and this is a little bit out of ignorance, but also a little bit out of not saying that the people who listen to Future Proof are not ignorant at all. I'm talking about the people who they know, like a few steps away from the kind of academics and the techies. A lot of people I've heard kind of say like, oh, AI is this new thing. It's on the scene. Just like it just popped up. And obviously in reality, AI has been all around us for quite some time. I think generative AI has been in people's faces a lot more. So it's become more of a, you know, talking point in society. I mean, what role can we get like a little bit more specific in how AI specifically plays in enhancing the efficacy of language learning for people? I mean, what is essentially the AI advantage, if you will? Imagine an app that has absolutely no AI capabilities trying to teach somebody to learn any language versus something that is AI. Does it boil down to personalization? Does it boil down to the variance, if you will, that it can, yeah, that everybody can have a tailored experience? Because I'm trying to think about like how to explain to people about why this is a big deal, why we're at a tipping point where we will see a lot of different disciplines start to move very quickly just because of AI. Like, what's the best way to explain that to the average person?
Yeah, well, I would say this way. The learning a language and many things, but a language in particular, is an amalgamation of a number of things that one needs to do. Right? You do need to learn the translation of a word. you do need to train and practice hearing that those words in the wild said at different speeds with different accents and different truncation and decode it successfully. And then you do need to also be able to grab that word when you need it to express what you're thinking and say it well enough in order for somebody else to understand what you're saying. So the process of learning a language is an amalgamation of things that you must do. And I've only listed a few. AI brings an amalgamation of techniques that can be applied to solve the various different challenges that exist in that lineup, right? So AI can certainly personalize and find the things that matter to you. If you say, I want to learn a language to travel, right? AI can help you get to the words that are useful for travel sooner in the learning process than other words. You don't need to know the names of all the professions in the world if you're doing it for travel. It can also figure out how to filter content based on the words that you know so that you have a chance of practicing. If you were to do a bunch of flashcards and wade into YouTube, you have no way of getting to the content that you have a chance of understanding, but AI can help that. AI can help have conversations that are tailored to what you care about. If you're learning for travel, go order a coffee, a beer, make a restaurant reservation, or buy a train ticket. You can have those conversations, which you know you're going to have when you're in country, and you can make those conversations more simple based on the words that you know. There are AI capabilities for listening to your pronunciation and giving feedback on that. There are AI tools for making games of the words that you're learning so that you can cement them in your brain easier, like a crossword puzzle from the last 10 words that you've learned, and on and on and on. So AI, it provides a host of capabilities to cover the host of things that one must do to successfully learn a language. So it is not one particular, capability or magic wand that we can wave. It is an intelligent, cobbling together of all of the amazing things it can do to get to targeted success at each step of the journey.
So I like this optimistic vision. Then I also think about, I happen to be in New York now and you're in the UK, and there are a lot of places where, access to apps and smartphone adoption is not exactly where it is, in where our abodes, right? So how do we ensure equitable access across different markets? And could we see a weird kind of bifurcation of society where there are the haves and the have-nots? And I almost think, worst case scenario is that there are a few markets that just have access to better technology so that we increase the gap between the haves and the have-nots. But are you more optimistic than I am on that regard?
Well, I am a glasses half full kind of guy, for sure. I know that what we provide the world is a freemium product that anybody can use and succeed with without spending a thin dime. Now, of course, they need a mobile device to do that. And if they don't have a mobile device or access to the internet, well, then our particular solution, free or not, is useless to them because they can't get to it. We certainly do also have a web version of what we do. So if you have a computer, but the same rules apply. If you don't have a computer, you don't have contact to the internet, then you can't get to what we're offering. Of course, if you don't have those things, right, the high degree of probability is learning another language isn't your first concern. You're probably looking to solve other problems out there, and they will probably be helped by making sure that more people in the world have more devices and more computers and more access. And I think that the world is trying that. I mean, people are trying to provide satellite access to the internet and get mobile devices into people's hands and so on. So I think that the world is moving to arming every individual with the ability to connect. And if they are armed with that, well, they certainly can enjoy what we provide for free.
Oh, for sure. And obviously, it's not in any way a critique of what you're working on. It's just an interesting challenge where, you know, does AI wind up almost having a multiplier effect and have certain, you know, parts of society move a little bit quicker just because they've got access to the latest, like, let's say, LLM, right? Or the best potential processing power to have the most advanced AI models running in like one business versus another company that's just subscribing to, like, let's say, the capabilities from like an OpenAI or somebody. But I mean, it is an interesting thing to think about. I mean, same thing, thinking about the ed tech app market over the coming years, just to have a weird transition there. I mean, I am really thinking about how education is just going to be so demonstrably different for the kids that come up right after my kids are done with school, or maybe they'll get the tail end of it. What innovations or trends do you predict are going to be shaping the ed tech app market over the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, actually, to entwine both points that you just made here on either side of that transition is I do think that these technologies will absolutely positively accelerate the people that use these technologies in a dramatic way, right? That, and it will make people who don't use them and fall off the back of the Peloton, if you will, you know, have a tougher time to catch up. And that is going to be a problem on a pure corporate level, right? The amount of compute power that's necessary to command these things is going to make sure that those people who can afford the compute power will accelerate, and we will probably have our Gini coefficient and the spread between the have and the have-nots increase as a result of this if we don't do anything about it. But the fact of the matter is that the people who traditionally didn't have any access to this stuff now have a far better chance to get access to this. And the amount of people that have a running head start because of their embrace of technology, that field is leveled. It may be harder to get the education necessary to know how to command these tools, but it will have a degree of access that we didn't have before. And so to bring it, you know, these two points to its conclusion, I think things are in one degree democratizing in the ability for a person in sub-Saharan Africa with a device to take computer science from a Harvard University class and then access AI models in order to do creative and interesting things. That is better than it ever was, but there's probably still more friction for the person in sub-Saharan Africa to get to all of that. And if they don't, the gap between those people who do and those people who don't will increase. And we got to make sure that we try and get it to everybody along the way from a pure human, you know, kind of standpoint.
Amen. And I know I have to let you go in a second, but let's just take all aspects of technology out of what you do, which I know is very difficult to do, you know, for a second. Just think about the mission. You know, I would love to go full circle and ask you, what are the broader implications of becoming, let's see if I can say it right, multilingual in today's globalized world, especially considering the cognitive, social, and career benefits? Because, and I say this as somebody who is just notoriously bad at learning language because of learning differences that they couldn't quite figure out with me when I was younger. And they basically said, stop taking French. You're butchering the language. We will give you free periods. We just want you to not learn languages. And I do, obviously, I wish that I was growing up 25 years later where maybe I would have had the benefits of some of these things, because I always knew that there were benefits. I just couldn't really access them. So if there's somebody a little bit who's on the fence from a language standpoint, what would you say in a nutshell are all of those benefits that somebody can get just from embracing a new language and just saying, okay, I'm going to pick up another language and just convince the naysayers out there?
Yeah, well, our mission at Memrise is enhance your mind to enhance your world. And the way that we can help people enhance their mind is through language learning. You can enhance your mind through astrophysics and many other things as well. But, you know, overall, to enhance your mind is to make your world better. But more importantly, I don't think I need to convince anybody within earshot of this that the world that we live in right now is a little bit more divisive and a little bit more encamped in, you know, positions and points of view that are just intractable. And we don't see the humanity of people on the other side of any argument. And we don't understand cultural differences in the way that we should. And it is amazing what happens when you learn a language, when you spend time in a new country with different people, a different culture, how quickly you can chip away at old, useless edifices of, you know, the way the world is and the way the world should be to your benefit. So the act of learning a language is in and of itself the act of getting a little bit better at seeing how other people see the world. And if there is no reason other than that, then that's a pretty good one. Plus, if you like BTS, you'll understand them when they're singing Korean.
You know, I feel like you just appeal to people on multiple levels there, which I love. And yeah, it's something that I think that a lot of people do feel really strongly about, just the idea to reach out to understand people from different vantage points. And I think probably the world could use a heck of a lot more of that. So this is a fascinating conversation. So yeah, Steve, thank you so much for making the time, sharing your expertise.
That was my pleasure. Enjoyed the conversation.